Toronto by-election, that's very... the Toronto by-election result, did you see that?
Yes.
Looks very good to me.
What happened there? I've been sick for 3 days.
Well, the NDP won, you see, in the East End Toronto seat.
Oh, they tried, weren't they?
And that was a Conservative cabinet minister's seat.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good news.
And they beat the prospective leader of the Liberal Party.
That's
yeah.
right.
Ross Templeton.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
that
was wonderful.
Now, the other thing too is the unemployed. Now, I have a fair idea of the unemployed, the organization themselves. But what I wanted to know is, was there any relationship, any working cooperation between the unions and the unemployed organizations?
Oh, yes, the left-wing unions. You mean in the Hungary Thuggists?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, there's no doubt about that. The left-wing unions, including our own union, we couldn't, as I said before, give them money directly, but we could indirectly, which we did. In fact, we called a mass meeting one time, and we voluntarily made up our minds that we'd each give them a dollar. Each one would give them a dollar.
And we had delegates still also feed to the unemployed councils.
Do you remember much of the organization of these unemployed councils? Nor is it, I can't find it set down.
The thing I remember mostly is the block committees. And I wasn't working, but I was asked to set up a block committee in my street, and I thought, well, by the way, that's a novel job for a man to do that's not working. And I went out to every house on Chester Street, and a house couldn't hold them all that night. The people that came to the block committee, that's how easy they were to organize.
But there was no really official connection with the Labour.
No.
Acting as individuals.
There was official connection too with unemployed organizations and the unions, and I know our union. We get delegates in the Central Council of the Unemployed. We didn't have them through all the years, but I know we had them at one time because I was a delegate myself for some time there.
Well, what was the Central Council of the Unemployed and what did it do?
It coordinated the different unemployed groups. Just the same as the Trades and Labour Council, and they were to coordinate the trade union votes.
What programs, projects were carried on, do you remember?
In the unemployed?
In the unemployed council.
I can't remember. I would say most of the budget that was carried on was to help workers on strike and to demonstrate for more relief.
For jobs and wages, and doing away with the camps.
What about the tag days? Were they put on by the council?
The unemployed council.
Yeah, who put them on exactly? Was it,
well, I'll tell you. I'll give you an instance of one of them. I think it was before the track started for Ottawa. There was a tag day one Saturday. I think it was six camps I filled that day. That was how the support was for the boys that was going to Ottawa. And it was illegal. They were told that they couldn't tag. But from the start of the tag, so many are tagging, nobody bothered them. And when the money all came in, they called for the chief of police to send a man up to guard this money, and the money stayed in the police station overnight.
Yeah. But I mean, were they put on by the council? Were they cleared by the council?
By the Vancouver Council?
No.
No, the unemployed
councils, yes.
I see.
Well, the Vancouver Labour Council refused to have anything to do with it.
Yes, that's right. Once or twice they had a speaker there, but the official, they didn't take any action.
Was there much of a fight over this policy in the council? Were there attempts to get the unemployed people represented on council? To get the council represented on the unemployed council?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there was.
In principle, they had delegates from the unemployed sitting right on the council. In the principle council.
Yes.
We never were able to do that.
You know, the relief camp project workers mm-hmm. union tried, applied 4 or 5 times, but were always turned down. That was in 1938, 1939.
Mm-hmm.
But there didn't seem to be any applications in the earlier part of the early 1930s.
No. They used to use the argument, you see, that the unemployed organizations were affiliated to the Workers' Unions of the League, and it was a dual organization.
Ah,
that was the position of the council.
Well, was it affiliated to the
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you know by chance what happened to all the records, such that they existed?
No, I don't.
Now, there is a, you mentioned the mass meeting, there was a, what was that? There was a big mass meeting called by the Vancouver Council, which the executive refused to condone. They sent out a referendum to the members about.
What was this about?
This was, yeah, this was in for the post office strikers.
Oh, yeah.
It's the only recorded vote in the minutes, where every name is recorded in all the minutes of the council. This is when, if I'm not mistaken, when Phil Stewart was thrown out.
Speak a bit louder.
Yeah. Do you remember the executive, I believe, took, or some of the members of there, took the position that mass meetings outside of the jurisdiction
of the council. I remember something about it, but I couldn't, I can't recall just exactly what happened.
Go ahead, Bill.
I have a whole bunch of questions.
I don't think Bill was kicked out then, because Bill was back with me at Niagara Falls in 1939.
Oh, he was reseated at the next meeting or something.
Oh, yes, uh-huh. Oh, that might have been,
Want me to take this for a while?
Yeah, take a while. I want to check a few points here.
Good. Okay. First, I'm going to go right back to before the war, actually. And I'm back to socialism. Do you feel there was any friction between socialists, people who are mainly socialists, and trade unionists?
Well, maybe Akerdance is part of that, in a way. You see, the old Socialist Party of Canada, they set themselves up as an educational organization. And I was just reading today in some of these books here that while they said that they would have nothing to do with the immediate demands of the workers, that what they wanted in Canada was socialism, not reforms of any kind. These were the
I've read about the same thing. Have you got any personal remembrances of it, recollections of this?
No, mostly we had quite a few SPSC men in our organization, and most of them was active trade unionists like Joe Hubble.
That's right.
No, but they were active. But there was others in the Socialist Party. They didn't believe in the industrial action at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Geordie Morgan was one. Geordie was a fine man, but Geordie didn't think that the Socialist Party should be.
And yet, when the Nanaimo strike was on in 1912 and 13, which was a long one, the whole thing became so ridiculous that the Socialists, some of those that were even elected, what is his name again, Hawthornwaite? Williams,
yes, please.
And Place, yes. They had to change that policy completely because of the fact that they were right in with the strikers.
Mm-hmm.
So if they didn't support the strike, they were out. So that was just as plain as that, of course.
Okay, well, what about women's suffrage? Do you remember at all?
Well, that was the 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16. Alan Guthridge was on there, and was later, of course, a member of the city council here.
Do you remember, was this an issue in your union at all?
No. No.
Wasn't. Okay.
I wasn't in that union at the time. I was a teamster for the city from 1912 to 1917.
Mm-hmm. What about conscription now? I imagine you personally were opposed to conscription.
Absolutely.
What about the attitude of the rank and file in your union?
Well, as I say, I wasn't in the union. I just came into the union in October of 1917, you see.
Well, that seems a good time, doesn't it? Mm-hmm.
But I know that before that we were very much opposed to conscription. I helped to organize the Teamsters in the city in 1913. And we finally got 56% of the Teamsters to join the union. We immediately applied for a charter for the Teamsters, but they didn't have any evidently down there in the States, because they didn't send us a charter for the Teamsters, they sent us a charter for the Hod Carriers and Giant Laborers Union. And they gave us a big round button to wear, and we used to walk down Main Street, whole bunch of us, quite proud of this. There was a red and white button. Hod Carriers and Giant Laborers Union.
What is a hod carrier?
Well, it carries the bricks up to the bricklayer when they're building houses, or with lime and cement and so on.
Oh, it still exists too, and I have one of the buttons at home. Uh-huh.
I know the insides, and I just wonder what hod was.
A hod.
Carried over the shoulder.
It's made of wood, it's got a handle coming down here, and there's like a little trough on the top.
Oh, yeah.
And you put it on your shoulder, you see.
Mm-hmm. I know what they are now. I just didn't know what the hod was.
Well, were you in this, Mr. Stewart, were you in the street railwaymen before the war?
No, I didn't join the street railwaymen in 1917.
Well, at that time, when you joined this, do you remember at all whether conscription was discussed in your local?
It was just about that time that conscription came in.
It came in 17, yeah. Wasn't it?
But I'm quite sure that our membership as a whole was opposed to conscription.
I see. Well, do you feel that there was that during the war the government used the conscription, let's say, used conscription to repress trade unions and political organizations?
Well, the...
What I mean is the business life changes are good.
The Socialist Party of Canada, right?
You feel this is suppressed during the war by the government?
Yes, I think
how?
So. Well, they suppressed the newspaper, the Clarion,
mm-hmm.
and they brought another paper out, the Red Flag, I think they called it, the next time.
That's right. And then there's the Indicator.
What?
The Indicator.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, but I mean, if they could manage to do that, how would you say they were repressed? I'm just trying to get you to elaborate on it, if you can.
Well, of course, the same thing would apply to the communist papers. They've had to change the name several times. And, it seems to satisfy the government for a certain time until the RCMP or whatever stooges they have that look into these things, until they get onto it and make a fuss, and then they suppress them again. So then they have to change again. And of course that applies not only to Canada, but it applies to the States, and it applies to France and Britain and practically all the rest of the capitalist world, where they've had to change the names of the papers.
Did your union lose any of its leaders due to conscription during the war?
Not that I can remember.
No, I don't think so.
Now, were you ever in the IWW?
I was for a short time, Buchanan.
I was, that's where I got my baptism in Spokane, Washington. I came out to the States first when I came out of this country. I went to Montana. The brother there that was forming a cattle ranch, so I worked there for a couple of years. And that rotten job called a cow puncher. Not on the movie screen, but right on the prairie.
How did you get into the NWW?
Well, I met a fellow there in Montana, and we decided that we'd make a move. So after 2 years, we went. We went all over the place. We were in Butte, and we went into Idaho and worked in the Taft Tunnel there for a while. And we just moved from job to job until we finally landed in Spokane. And when I landed in Spokane, I didn't know a thing about trade unions or anything. I was always in the farming business, in the old country too. I was born and raised in a sheep farm. But when I landed in Spokane that November, we just got out of the station, my chum and I, and we sees the damnedest thing going on ever I saw in my life. There was the cops, mounted police, and the firemen were out, and hoes and the people down the streets, and everybody was getting knocked around. And finally there was a little girl, she was rolling down the street in front of this big hose. The fire, you know, the fireman. And that just, oh God, I don't know, something happened to me and said I just saw red. I guess it went back about 400 years, up to the Highlands or something. But I completely lost my temper. And I ran after the kid and gave him to her mother, and I walloped that big fireman right in the jaw. Knocked him out. I don't know how I didn't get arrested. Of course, there was many milling around there. I guess that should save me. But anyway, that night in Spokane, the chief of police, Sullivan, he was shot. Got shot through the neck when he was sitting in his front room up at Cannon Hill. And I don't know who shot him, but he was a good shot anyway. my chum and I went up to see it the next day, and there was a nice little hole in that one, just about the size of your finger. Must have been a 22. But anyway, shot him in the back of the neck, he died the next day. Well, that started us off. They called a meeting that night. There was a man put on the IWW. But they called a meeting despite the man. And we went to the meeting. And we bought a bunch of pamphlets, and that started me off in the labor movement. I swore that night that from now on I'm going to find out all about this thing. I couldn't stand this brutality of knocking people on the heads like that.
How long did you keep up your membership?
Well, I only stayed in Spokane for 3 months, so I just joined, and that was about all.
I see.
That was the time that Joe Hill was going around, and Elizabeth Gourlay, she was about 16 at the time. She saw him in Spokane with her button shoes up on the side here and a long frock.
Is that so?
Yeah, yeah.
That was Elizabeth Gourlay Finn?
Yeah. She's dead now, eh?
She died about a month ago, wasn't she?
Yes. She was a great girl, boy.
Do you know any of the old IWW songs?
Oh, I got them right here. I just love them.
Because I'm a folk song collector too.
Is that so?
You can buy their book, as a matter of fact, a little red book.
Is there a little red book still in?
It's sold off and on by one of the bookstores. They've been out.
I know most of them, I think. But
yeah. Mm-hmm. I have one once. I've been trying to get a hold of it.
I've had two. I give mine to Jack Stevenson. I never got it back. And Jack's dead now.
The IWW, of course, they believed in the industrial workers of the world, and it was a good idea, but of course they didn't believe in doing it through politics. They were just going to go. But they sure took over in Washington, boy. These lumber camps, I used to go to lumber camps, and one night my chum and I had to walk 4 miles to the blooming camp after getting off the train, pouring the rain, the blankets soaking wet. That's the kind of conditions that they had before the IWW moved in. When I say moved in, they moved in all right. They moved in there by the hundreds and they burned the damn things to the ground, mice and all. Yeah, and they were lousy, believe me. So they did a good job in the lumber camps. There's no more of that bringing your blankets along and lying with about 40 people in a two-row bunkhouse.
Were you in the lumber camps in British Columbia at all?
No. No, I got enough lumber camps down there for a few months.
But did you take part in any of the
No, I didn't take part in wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about you, Mr. Stewart? You were in the IWW too.
Yes, I was only on a short time too. I went down to Butte, Montana. There was quite a few BA Vancouver people went down there by the time I went down. And there was no organization there in the mines at that time. They were dominated by company gunmen. And there was a big fire in the speculative mine. I think there was 75 men burned to death. And every mine in the camp closed down the next day. And there was organizers there from different organizations trying to organize the good miners. And Frank Little was there. He had been in an accident. He was going down on a stick and would attend a meeting this night in the next civilian's hall, I think it was, Arizona Street. And he went through his apartment. He took him out of the hotel and hauled him down to the flats and hung him. And they called for pallbearers. We carried him all the way from Butte down to the flats where he was buried. I wasn't in the IWW then, but I volunteered as a pallbearer, and I joined the IWW that same day that Frank Little was murdered. And I stayed with them until I come back to Vancouver again in the end of 1917.
What were you doing in Butte?
Look in the mines.
Well,
so in a sense, both of you got your political initiation in the...
In the Wobblies.
In the Wobblies.
No, I had a little bit of connection with the Socialist Party before I went there to the States in Vancouver. I used to attend the meetings of the Pete, but I wasn't a member at that time. I didn't join until after I came back.
Did you ever have anything to do with the Socialist Labour Party?
No.
Okay. It's just not a try. What about the OBU? Were you a member of that?
No, I wasn't, but there was individual members in our organisation that was members, and they were very proud of their button, and despite of the fact it was a dual organisation, they used to wear their button in their lapel. Yeah. I mean, Jack Johnson was one of them members.
Did they make women take them off?
No.
Two of them never did?
No.
No, the Division 101, the street element of Vancouver, they've always been more to the left than the most of unions. I mean, except the real leftist unions. But for the AFL, they were really to the left.
What about... did your union local support the OBU any other way? Give them money?
Not that I can remember.
What about the strike fund after the Winnipeg General Strike?
Oh yes, we raised a lot of money for the strike, even after the strike was over. But it was through collections, it wasn't donated by the organization.
But did you get a pretty good response from the members?
Oh yes, the members were strongly in favour of the...
Was it an official executive collection, or what was it?
It was official, all right, because they quite often these things they would like myself. I was quite a collector, once. One or two, perhaps, I'd be sent down there. And they would, it would passed by the union that they would pay someone to go down there and collect money.
That wasn't contrary to the Constitution at all. No. If you asked for permission, it was very seldom you'd ever turn down. You'd get permission to collect. And they would give you a union stationery to put your collection, to head your collection list with, too.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the OBU did anything? Do you think it accomplished anything?
I think they did. I think that, you see, you have to go according to the times. And that at that time, I believe that they, what they needed in the States especially was direct action because it was so brutal. You know, if you were down in strength, you were up against a bunch of stooges with guns and blackjacks and all that sort of stuff. So there was no use of talking about politics when you're in front of a guy that's going to beat you in the head. So I think they did a good job in that way. The fact of the Logan business itself is a good illustration. Yeah.
I think, Pete, that they did a good job at the beginning, but taking the long range, I think they had harmed the trade union movement for some 16 years after that, because it weakened it tremendously.
Yeah, well, of course, there might be some truth in that too, Charlie.
Was there much of this type of oppression from the employers, direct action oppression in British Columbia?
Oh, yes. It was pretty tough in the old days, you know, in British Columbia, because the most of them would try and it never happened in the BC elected, of course. But a lot of unions were up against scabs, and you know what happened up to the miners there when they put bulldozers in front of the women's sat in front of the
carbon.
Yeah, carbon, yeah, and they're on bulldozers over them. And so they were really tough.
When was this?
Oh, that must have been
in the middle 30s, I think it was. Yes. I just couldn't tell you exactly when.
Yeah.
Where?
Carbon.
The miners were out in strikes. They got the scabs in there, and the woman went in front of where they were bringing in the scabs, and they got a bulldozer there and run right over them.
So far as the street railway is concerned, now, Union, we had nothing like that at all. In fact, I don't know whether it was the management, whether it was the kind of people that had as employees, but I remember one time when the Citizens Committee was formed, you remember, and they were going to break up the different organizations, and we set up a labor place to guard the meetings, and it was there, L, badge, red L, you know, and the superintendent came to me one night, he was in the bullpen at Prior Street, and he told me that he knew what that was, and that was the Red Army, and he says, you know, he says, well, like you working for the company, Charlie, he says, we're not going to stand for that sort of thing. And I went and spoke to Harry Cotton, he was acting business agent, and he says, we'll see you with that. So he took it up with the management about the superintendent talking to me that way, and Mr. Murren called the superintendent in. He had never seen me, but he told him, he says, I don't care what Stuart's politics are, he says, as long as he does his work, he says, that's all I want of him. And you remember that, Mr. Dinsmore.
Why was the BC Electric, in this sense, such a good employer?
Well, we never thought it was too good, you know.
No, I mean, in comparison to the others. Yeah, I mean, you admitted that
they never tried. I think the union had a lot to do with it.
The union was strong.
Union. It was one of the best unions, I think. It was one of the best unions in British Columbia.
And probably in Canada, up the street gentlemen. I think it was.
I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah. They were strong. Even the last strike that we went out on, that was in, 14? Well, that was only a few years before I quit.
47.
47, yes. Mm-hmm. Well, we were out a month that time. But we got what we wanted. 15 cents an hour. And I was the publicity chairman at that time, and I went in the radio every night. The last time I went down, I says, now, speaking to the public, BC electors capitulate now and giving us 15 cents an hour. Why the heck couldn't do that in the first place and save all the trouble that the public went through for a month with that transportation? That's what we wanted in the first place. But they said, no, no. So we had to go on strike for a month to get it.
I think it's partly, I think there is a socialist in the management somewhere. No, I'm serious. I think Harrington was telling me this, that there was a socialist somewhere up in management in the BC Electric. I'm going to check back.
Well, of course, the socialist in the latter days would be Gower, because he was accused of being a socialist by some of these Goldwater type that we have in Canada. Maybe you remember a few years back.
Yeah, but that wasn't exactly that. He was pretty progressive. Lots of those around.
We have now all of the old records of the BC Electric have been turned over to the university.
Mm. Is that so?
So we're going to be able to check some of these things, possibly.
I don't know. That should be interesting. On record.
This may not be on record.
You know Jack Harrington well, do you?
Well, I've interviewed him 2 afternoons.
Is that so?
A lot of time.
Is his mind still as clear as it was? God, he was a great historian, that fella, you know, in the early days.
Still pretty good.
He is. Mm. He must be about...
well, he's in his 80s.
He must be about 85 or 86, I guess.
Mm. Well, next thing I want to bring up is the Workers' Union League, Paul.
Yeah, that's what I was just
going to
suggest.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, were you members of the Workers' Union League?
No.
Didn't hold the dual membership or anything. Now, did the Workers' Union League try to organize in the areas where there already was unions?
Not to my knowledge. Is it to your knowledge, Joe?
No.
Never. I don't know if they'll do that. No, they went out to organize. They unorganized.
There might have been some poaching, but it wasn't the policy of the organization to poach other unions. It was to organize the unorganized, that was their main function.
Was the street railroad very hostile to the league?
What did you mean to leave? No. No, they... There was just one time that I ever saw any sign of hostility, and that was when the longshoremen, they hadn't been organized since 1923, I think it was. The union was broken then, and they weren't organized until the Workers' Union League organized them. They'd been in the company union for several years, and I think this was the 35 strike, and that was the only official collection that we'd asked to the company were the bar, we weren't allowed to take it up. I know I raised the question at the Congress Convention in Detroit. That must have been 1935, I think, or 36. I was
35,
down there. But I don't think there was any hostility, and I think that the reason that the officers even took the position they did at that time to refuse that to take the collection up for the longshoremen was that there was pressure brought to bear on them from the outside, probably the Council of the Congress.
I was going to ask you a little bit more about that particular strike. It became a much long drawn out affair.
You mean the BC Electric strike?
No, the longshoreman strike.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Eventually, the council came to support it, Vancouver Trades and Labour Council. There seems to be some dispute over that at first.
Yeah, well, I just couldn't say how far they went in support of that.
Well, they had speakers from the longshoremen up at the council meetings.
But there was plenty of our fellows took part in that Black Friday.
How much support they gave for it, I couldn't say.
We call that little guy again that got a big bump in his head about the size of a turkey egg. little Jimmy Thompson, you know? Not Thompson, no. Well, anyway, Jimmy, he was a veteran in the First World War, and he had a few medals, a whole sling of them. And he says, I don't give a damn. He says, I won't dare. He says, had a veteran there, you know. And I says, don't forget. He says, they don't give a damn, these guys, who the heck. Jimmy went down, and he was in the very front ranks when they crossed the tracks there. And boy, if he didn't get it. He had his little turban on too, you know, the blue hat, you know, all his medals. That cop came along and he just bought him one with a
that led back to the East?
On the Workers' Unity League, we've been trying very hard to get a hold of someone in the organization, you know, that we can interview and find out
Why don't you get on and see Tom McEwen?
I had an appointment with him, but he had an emergency meeting of some sort. He didn't show up. So I've been out of town last week. Mm-hmm. That was when I was supposed to get last, just before I went.
Yeah. Away. He's the only guy around that you know to see.
Only one that I can remember offhand.
Mm-hmm. I better go see him.
On December, this is a point of interest, December 15th, 1935, the council finally endorsed the IWA strike, longshoremen strike. Mm-hmm. By that time, they had affiliated with the IWA, or the ILA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the other thing is the ACCL, the All-Canadian Congress of Labour, and the Canadian Federation of Labour. Did you have any connections, or do you know anything about this? This is very, almost a blank wall, or is very difficult to even find out about them.
When did the BC Federation of Labour come into effect?
The Canadian Federation of Labour, wasn't it?
Yeah, as the BC Federation, or the Canadian.
I was talking about the Canadian Federation, which was a dual organization
of
TLC.
Yes. And so was the...
It started out as the All-Canadian Congress.
All-Canadian Congress.
In 1927.
Uh-huh.
In 1935, it broke up in the group Burford and the Electrical Workers.
Mm-hmm.
And the one big union...
It was based on the building trade union mainly, wasn't it? At the beginning.
Yeah, amalgamated building.
Yeah, I think they were genuine trade unionists. They were barking up a wrong tree, though, I think, latterly myself. But the Canadian Federation of Labour, it really turned into a strike-breaking organization. Mind, they went down to Estevan there to try to break the strike down there.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there was a organizer in Vancouver here, and I'm not going to mention any names. He's quite prominent in the labor movement today. And he told us that he had been told to go down there and do that job. I remember he asked what I would do if I was going down. Well, I said, it's easy enough to answer that. I said, you're a trade unionist, aren't you? I said, you wouldn't go down there and broke a strike. And he didn't. He went down there and he tried to help the strikers, and he was expelled from the
Federation.
And he came back here. He didn't do very much for a while, but he's, I would say, he's an international board member today, and I think he's quite right-wing, but at the same time, he had enough union principle, he wasn't going to go and help to break another strike.
When was that Estevan strike?
Hmm?
When was the Estevan strike?
Estevan? I couldn't remember the year. It was in the early 30s there sometime.
33, yeah.
Around about that. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that would be the ACCL. At
that time, they had the member. No, the Workers' Unity League. I think it was had the.
Yeah, what I meant was that he must have been with the Canadian Congress of Labour.
No, he was with the Federation.
It wasn't formed, I don't think, till 1935.
It wasn't. Well, was there a second strike in Estevan?
No, that's what I was wondering, because
there might have been. I'm pretty sure it was the Canadian Federation he was with. And there might have been a second strike at Estevan or down there.
Bill.
Okay.
But you didn't come into any conflict or very much contact with these other organizations?
No.
No.
You just about done it.
Yeah, there's just one thing. You were with the unemployed council. These unemployed councils that you
yes.
This was in the early 30s.
Yes.
What happened in the late 30s? Were there any connections between the labor, your union or the council and the unemployed after the 35 trick?
Not that I can remember.
No.
Yeah.
What about the post office and art gallery sit-downs?
Well, individually we supported the boys down there, but the organization didn't do anything about it.
You didn't dig up a collection?
Oh, yes, we dig up
a
collection.
Yeah, that's the same.
I think every payday we had a collection up for them.
Well, yeah, we kept on collecting all the time for them.
What other unions do you think in Vancouver did this, or in BC took the same, I mean, helped out in some way, or took up collections?
Other organizations, you mean?
Other trade unions.
Oh. Well, I don't know. There must have been other trade unions.
Mostly the left-wing trade unions, I think, Pete. I don't know if... I couldn't say if there's many of the AFL.
Probably longshoremen.
Longshoremen, yes.
Good.
Other than taking up collections, you didn't have any other connection with the sit-downers?
No, not through the union.
No, but as individuals, there's plenty of individuals in the street elements union that took a very active part.
Doing what?
Well, during the all the time they were, of course, the unemployed, as you know, were striking all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And they were having meetings all the time on the street. And they were getting knocked down all the time by police. You know, it was a continuous thing.
And some of us went down there every night to the post office, and the boys were there and helping to organize concerts. Got talent in from the outside. Of course, we weren't the only ones too. There was preachers even doing that, like with Evan Matheson.
Oh, sure.
And he had one of the biggest United Churches in town here, and it was hardly a night before he was down there. Reverend Matheson, yeah.
Yeah, but what about this guy that had the Church of the Open Door? Gore Avenue there. Yeah. You know, he wrote a book on the Untouchables. Have you ever seen that book?
No, I never did, Pete.
My sister, my daughter, Elspeth's got it right
now. So? Well, Matheson got his reward, though, for doing that. He was kicked out of his church, and he had to go out to Burnaby there, and instead of having one big church to look after, he had three little churches to look after, and he had half the salary.
Well, that was the Reverend Mr. Rodden of the
Personated
Church.
Uh-huh.
The Gore Avenue in Hastings, the Church of the Open Door. He fed thousands of unemployed there. Thousands. He went all around the country and getting people to go out with automobiles or carts or anything else to the farms and bring in carrots and turnips and cabbages. And then he had a bunch of volunteer women cooking it for the unemployed in there every day. So he did a good job. He wrote that book, it's a very interesting book, The Canadian Untouchables.
I've never seen it.
It's out of print now, that's why I told my daughter to be very careful, you can't get it anymore.
How big a book is it?
Oh, it's quite a book, about that thick.
Mm-hmm.
So full-sized?
Hmm?
Full-sized.
Yeah. Quite a few pictures there, you know. He talks about people there that were doctors and lawyers and professional people of all kinds, right on the bump. A handout.
Is he still around?
No, he died a few years back.
Now, there's one other point, a very specific point here that I wanted to ask about the expulsions in... Oh, there's three other points, I think. But yeah, about expulsions. when you were thrown out, this just started in May of 1940. In June, according to the council meetings, the street railwaymen endorsed the action of the president of the council, which was Jameson at that time, throwing you out.
Mm-hmm.
This seemed a little incongruous. Did the street women not back you up? on this side?
Well, I think that's a little haywire, that thing. I don't remember if the union had taken a vote on that and endorsing the action.
They must have endorsed them in some way anyway, Pete, or the other delegates wouldn't have been attending the council.
Oh, yeah.
They had to do this, in other words, in order to get back into the council.
Yes.
I don't remember any meeting that dealt with that.
No, I don't remember any action on it myself, no, but no. That's the only thing that I can figure.
I think it was already made up.
They must have endorsed the action. They withdrew, the delegates withdrew, I think.
Yeah.
But I think they were back at the next meeting again.
Mm-hmm. Because according to this, the chairwoman did not vote against the FFL decision to exclude the communists.
No.
Your local voted for with the FML decision.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I guess they pretty well had to as an organization.
Of course, that was only the one time I was expelled. I was expelled once after that, too.
Yeah, that's as far as I've gone.
I was expelled in 1951. Also, I was only out a short time. I was back again in 1941. Or 42, and back to the council. I was at the Congress before it was back in the council again. But I was expelled from the council again in 1951 in January. I'd been over in the old country, and someone raised in the Vancouver Labour Council when I was away, or the Vancouver Trades and Labour Council, that I was over at the World Federation meeting. It was, I forget where it was meeting at that time, but I was supposed to be a delegate there. I was told that when I come back. Well, I wasn't. My mother was still there, and she had an accident, and I went home. I said, I'd sure like to have been there, but I never got a chance. But that was one of the excuses they gave for having me expelled from the council.
Someone mentioned this to me, I can't just remember who, but they said that, particularly in the early period, the council and the BC workers were very much opposed to red baiting. Is this something that grew up in the 30s?
Well, the red baiting?
Red baiting. And
on the 30s, in the 30s, we throve in red baiting. Because anybody that started it was soon isolated by the majority of the delegates at the council. Even people like Jack Henderson down there, he's a liberal, but even Jack used to get up and oppose him, you know, and we didn't have to oppose them much at all. There was other people there that had no connection with the left-wing movement at all who would oppose the red baiters.
Well,
to give you a picture of how the people of British Columbia felt in these days of depression, I was a delegate, a trade union delegate to the Soviet Union, one of the first delegates to go over there, 1934. And I went to Scotland to see my father. He was over 90 then. And I was a week later coming back, two delegates, another delegate. It was late too, so we came back. And the CPR, my wife and my family met me down below. They let them down below to meet me, and I came up there. When I came up, I couldn't understand what the heck was the matter. That was in January 1935, I come back. And I couldn't get through the crowd. And there was thousands of people there. The CPR was full. It was full right down Cordova Street. Streetcars couldn't go past. And they had an improvised platform there for me to get up and say a few words, which I didn't.
Right inside the depot.
Right inside the depot. There was the cops there, but they wouldn't dare to feel hurt. There's thousands of people just raising the heck, you know. And then we had a meeting. I told them we were having a meeting, as far as I knew, in the Sunday. I was advised that in Calgary. So we had that big meeting down at the down Georgia Street, you know. And before the meeting was at 8 o'clock, before 7 o'clock, there wasn't a soul more to get in there. And they had an overflow meeting up in the Moose Hall.
And what was we collected that night at that meeting?
I don't remember.
It was $1,180 during the Depression. And that just, and there was four of us delegates spoke there. I was the last because I went to the Moose Hall to speak first up there. Then I came back to the hall and I was the last to speak there. And there was nobody heckled, except one asked a question or two. Everybody agreed with what was said. Well, that just shows you what the hungry theatres were. So I can, when Charlie said there wasn't much red baiting, you can understand why there wasn't. They were scared of death to open their mouth and whistle.
Now, the red baiting developed with the Cold War.
That's when it really started, yeah.
Didn't you get some in the, at the time of the expulsions in the late 30s?
Well, yes, that there was quite a bit of red beating in the Congress and in the Trades and Labour Council too, around that time. But that was a wee after the Hungary Thirties, you know. That was.
I get the impression from the minutes that from about 1935 on, it grows more and more into two camps within the council.
Yes.
The council officially becomes more conservative, more totalitarian, dictatorial, and less representative of the opinions of the rank and file. Would you say this is true?
I think it's true. I think
you could explain why you think this happened too.
Well, the only reason I can see was the roadmen had been in control of the labour movement so long, and they were afraid that they were going to lose that control over the membership.
You understand what the roadman is?
No, I was just
going to say, better explain that.
Yes, I'll give you. It's the international board members in the country there. They controlled the Congress, and they're controlling the Congress more or less today, too. And they controlled the locals with an iron hand. I remember one time, Terry Morrison, and Terry Morrison was a good friend of mine, that he had been expelled from his union, and the time of OBU to get over, and he came back again, and he was a good international man after he came back. I remember I wrote an article to the Daily Clarion, I think it was, on the roadmen prior to a convention, and Teddy was in a delegate or a member of the executive of the council too, so he tried to get the council to have me expelled, and even the executive didn't go for that. And he wrote to my union, and the union didn't do anything about it, and he took it up with our international, and that just to show that the international, they gave their own memberships the benefit of the doubt in anything, and they didn't take any action, but he did contact the local officers of the union, what it was all about. So that was just an instance to see if Terry was a roadman then, and he was determined to hold on, and he wasn't going to have the roadman blackguarded by anybody if he could help it.
Well, did the roadmen increase in power in the 30s to cause this, or...?
No, they were representing the reactionary AFL. And you see, and of course, our unions in Canada, so many of them affiliate mostly with the AFL. Naturally, they're in Canada, you see, off and on. And, of course, at conventions, labour conventions, of course, they're there quite prominently, and doing their best, of course, to support the reactionary elements that's in there.
They're there all the time, Pete. All these internationals, they've got their roadmen in the country, do you see, to carry out the policy of the particular international.
Yeah. I just wondered why it was worse in the late 30s than previous to that.
Well, previous to that, there hadn't been the same opposition to them. It was plain sailing with them. And they could give a little bit semblance of democracy, but when when the policies were being attacked, and they couldn't change the policies, they had to attack us.
I just wondered if the fact that they were represented the employed, the fairly well-off employed in a sense.
Well, that had something to do with it too, of course. Because the Trades Council did not take a position in support of the unemployed, I found out. They didn't take that. They were more concerned with the people that was in the job. I'll give you an instance there, although there was delegates to the Trades Council. For a while, Ben Gough, to keep his seat as a delegate to the Trades Council, had to pay the per capita tax of nearly all the members that was in the machinist union that weren't working. And he continued as a delegate when he didn't have the membership, but he paid the per capita tax for a certain number.
What sort of support do you think Ben Gough had? Would he have won an election within, a membership election?
Hmm?
Would Ben Gough have won a membership election?
And his union?
Well, no, I mean, of all, like, as
the Trades and Labour Council and the Congress,
Secretary.
Too. Yeah.
I mean, do you think if you had sent around a referendum to all of the local unions, that he would have had much support?
He had quite strong support.
Yeah. He always got elected.
Yeah, that didn't always... Yeah, often no one ran against him.
No, there's nobody ran against him, really.
But that's often an indication of strength of support more than anything else.
And it can also be representative that you removed all the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only other point, there's two other things I want to ask. One is, you were in the Vancouver Trades and Labour Council. I just wondered, in what sense was there a British Columbia labour movement? Was there much connection between, say, Vancouver and the rest of the province, or was it very much a Vancouver labor movement?
Well, Vancouver and New Westminster, of course. That was at that time.
Yeah.
Vancouver and New Westminster, Trades and Labor Council.
But did you have much connections with Victoria, Prince Rupert, the interior?
No. Well, I can't say myself that we had any great connections up there.
No, I don't think so. Ben Gough was a vice president of the Congress for several years before he was elected the president, and I guess through the grief, as a Congress representative, he kept in touch with these different places. But it was mainly a greater Vancouver trade union movement in the main.
I get that opinion also regarding the CCF.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite localized, and particularly in the early years, to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
The other specific question I wanted to ask was, during the late 1920s, between about, say, 1925 and 1929, the so-called prosperous years, I also get the impression there was quite a bit of unemployment around. Were they that prosperous in and around Vancouver?
They were not. There was a terrible unemployment.
All through the late 20s?
Yes, and after the First World War, let's say 1920, 21, there were so many unemployed, even veterans, they didn't have any place to put them in Vancouver. They put them out to the exhibition grounds. I don't know whether you heard about that or not, but that's what happened. So there was plenty of unemployment during these years.
Up till about 1923, I think.
Yes.
And between 23 and 29, there wasn't so much, so I don't think it'd be.
Well,
there might have been some, but I don't recall that. I know up until about 1923, there was quite a strong unemployed movement here. In fact, it was that's one time that the trade union movement did take a part. And that's when the Committee of 25 was elected from the trade unions to work with the unemployed.
I just wondered whether any of these unemployed organizations stayed in working during the late 20s.
They may have, but I don't know. It would just be guessing on my part to say they were.
Because we have no way to check this? You know, we're no. Kept unemployed.
I don't know if any unemployed organization that was carried over to the hungry, that's what you mean, the hungry 30s, eh?
Well, I mean, really, between the Depression, the Big Depression in 22, 21, 23, and 1929, when the 30s began, that period of 4 or 5, 6 years in there, I have the feeling that the unemployment was much higher than is normally thought.
It could have been, but I don't know if any...
Well, I know that from 1924 to 1926, almost 27, we had a dairy business at the time. I was trying to get off the BCLI because I had a gastric ulcer and I was trying to get off, but however, I wasn't able to get off. Anyway, I sold my house and bought this dairy, 9 cows, up in Wales, so on. And why I'm saying there was a lot of unemployed is because we went around selling our milk. We had a wagon, you know. And there was an awful lot of people out of a job around that district anyway, up Kingsway, and that couldn't pay for their milk, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And that was in these years, 24, 27. So I don't know about the rest, but I know that in that district there was a lot of unemployed people.
That's about all.
That's about all the questions I have. I'll no doubt think of a few others later.
I don't know whether we give you a very good picture of what's been happening all these years or not. It's too bad we didn't keep a diary all these years, you know.
It's quite hard when you've got to use your own your memory, you know, for so far back.